right now, 7:45 a.m. It's time to chat with Zeke. Good morning, Zeke.
Howdy. I'm here. There are no glitches at all.
And how are you, Zeke?
Doing very, very well. It was an enjoyable weekend. How was your weekend?
Eh.
Eh? I'm sorry to hear that. Next time you should stick with me.
It was okay, actually. It was just a lot of housekeeping to do.
Housekeeping?
Housekeeping to do.
No, you see, I avoid that like the plague.
Well, I did avoid it for quite a few weeks, and it got to the point where the plague was there.
Move. Very simple.
Anyway, mm-hmm. Yes, do go on, because you have quite an exercise for us.
Yeah, there it's actually up. My homework. So some of you actually know, I don't think I've told an awful lot of people, but I'm taking a course at the Musée des Beaux-Arts on how to be a volunteer tour guide. And as part of that whole process, you have to come up with a tour. And one of the things that, going around and so on, I have a sort of fascination with public art. And so I realized that, the museum has a, what would it be called? It's a sculpture garden. And right now there's a bit that's on Du Musée. There's another bit that's on Sherbrooke. And so I decided that for my homework, I was going to be doing basically the public art and then also the architecture of the various buildings, because they're building a third new addition to the museum. I think it's the Urgell Bougie Pavilion now. There's the initial original building, which I've discovered recently, used to be called Benaiah Gibb, but now is called the Hornstein Pavilion. There's the Stewart Pavilion behind it, which is the first addition they made. Then across the street, they moved to the Moshe Safdie. Built up the whole Moshe Safdie Pavilion, and then now across the street on the northwest corner of Sherbrooke and Crescent, there's going to be the Urgell, the Bougie Pavilion. But yes, anyhow, given that, it was the sort of thing where then, this whole learning about art guide touring and making tours and so on was, interesting to say the least, because it's the sort of thing where normally I just try and point out obscure places and then find out sort of information on them, realizing that when you go to the museum, they actually do say that, you need to interact and engage the people, which is an interesting sort of thing, because normally it's, if you're dealing with adults and so on like that, sometimes trying to engage them becomes more of a task and is not as simple as you would think. But anyhow, that's enough of the background. It's the sort of thing where, for my homework, it's the sort of thing where, as I said, I had to make up a tour, and the way that they like tours is they call various spots where you stop a station, and then you pick and choose one, two, three various pieces of art that are relatively close to each other, and you then do your best to engage the visitors in the art and sort of interest them in the art. And one of the easy ways is to be asking questions. However, on the radio or on the computer, because this is also all available on computer at any time you want, but sometimes it's difficult to engage somebody on the radio, because if you have questions, I'm not going to be able to hear them or answer them. So I'm just going to go blithely off. And there, one of the things that I quite like at the museum is they have a rather substantial and significant design collection, which is where the whole Stewart Pavilion comes in. And that's sort of like the back end of the old museum. And then when they built that, they then placed, they had this whole space, which is now called the Lab Design, which is really should be Design Lab, but I don't know, they got it backwards or something like that. It used to be the cafeteria and restaurant for the museum, but that's now moved across the street. And off of that, there's a very, very nice terrace, which is, to me, it's one of the best kept secrets in the city, just because nobody is there. And I always like that when nobody's there. Empty bars, empty vistas, and so on and so forth. They're rather cool. From that terrace, you can see a bunch of sculpture on Du Musée. And so there is this piece by Barbara Hepworth, which is there temporarily, although it's there sort of like a long-term temporary, so maybe like only for 5 years or something like that, as opposed to forever and ever, because it's on loan from McGill, because the new cancer center that they built up on Pine Avenue next to the round building, the McConnell building, that by the Barbara Hepworth sculpture, which they had, which is called Square Forms with Circles, used to be where that building is. And so when they decided that they were going to build the building, they then said, oops, we can't sort of excavate and destroy the sculpture. We should move it. And they ended up loaning it to the museum, because museums are always good places to loan pieces of art. They know how to take care of them. They know how to deal with them. And yeah, so it's there. There's also the Riopel thing, which is called Ibu Pel, and that's so that I'm going to be talking about next, because yeah, the whole upshot of all of this is that I'm going to be talking about my various tour stuff for the next couple of weeks. But anyhow, on to Dame Barbara Hepworth, because yeah, then there's on the other side of the street, I'm going to be talking about the Jim Dine two twin 6 foot hearts, and then the Henry Moore large totem head, which does not look like a head to me at all. But anyhow, the Barbara Hepworth, which is called, as I said, Square Forms with Circles. It's on the Musée, and yeah, one of the things that sort of struck me is that in her life, what was it she said? Where do I have this quote there? Yes, she said, I always imagine the sort of setting I would like to see them in, because I firmly believe that sculpture and forms generally grow in magnitude out in the open with space and distance and hills. This is on a hill, but it's sort of squished against the side of a building, and so it really doesn't look all that large, but it is rather large. It's, I think, about 8 feet tall. It's basically the size of a person, a large person, someone, say a basketball player or a football player. And it's got these, what I think it's 7 square rectangular type of things made out of bronze that, because it's old, it was made in 1963, so it's as old as I am. It's become green. The fancy terminology for that is the patina, which is sort of like the just covering on the outside, which has become green. It's then got it's got circles that have been cut out of it. And the thing that I found just as far as what she was doing is, yeah, Barbara Hepworth, she was born in 1903 in England, and she died in 1975 in a horrific fire, sort of like Elsa's. It was the sort of thing where, back in those days, everybody smoked, and Elsa, of Elsa's restaurant fame, she was smoking in bed, and it caught fire, and then the whole thing, she left this mortal coil. Apparently with Barbara Hepworth, it was the same thing as well. And yes, old women smoking is never a good idea, especially, or old people smoke. Actually, how about we say that smoking is bad for you? But anyhow, that was her background. And yeah, back in, as with a lot of British stuff that was in the war, in World War II, there were all sorts of bombs and stuff like that. And so a lot of her sculptures from the 30s and 40s got bombed and destroyed. And so she then, later in life, when she had become sort of more well-known and was making some fair bit of scratch, shall we say, she decided that she was going to recreate stuff. And so she had been married to this guy, Ben Nicholson, who was also a British artist, although he wasn't as well-known, or isn't as well-known now as she is. And he had done this thing called, he did painted white reliefs, and so she decided that she was going to recreate his painted white reliefs in bronze, plus on top of it, she was going to, try and recreate various things that had been destroyed in the war. And, so that's how the whole thing sort of got started. It's, I think, maybe one of three in the world, because there's another one, the exact same sculpture, that's off in Dallas. And then I think there might be another one floating around that I haven't been able to find. But yes, anyhow, for the most part, she had started out wood carving. And then later in life, in 1958 exactly, she started working in bronze. And by the way, Liz, you can pop in with a question anytime. As I said, I'm supposed to be engaging the audience here. And obviously, if I'm just rattling on like a monotone
enlightening, all the details. I'm impressed by all these details. I just imagine
now
what
you're just gonna make
about.
Me blush if you use words like
true.
Impressed.
No, it's true.
But yeah, there it's some of the quotes that I've gotten. Okay, so if you just want me to go prattling on and rattling on, and you're nodding your head, yes, okay, fine.
Yes, there's a big smile on my face saying yes, please do go on.
There it's what was it? Back in the 50s, she got to be rather well known. She'd gone to school actually with Henry Moore, and then one of these places that I found was doing for research and found out she liked mathematics. And so she's actually, to my mind, one of the reasons why, you know, those sort of like just generically abstract sculptures, which are sort of like blah, and you're supposed to enjoy and imagine, or enjoy and revel in the form and sort of the sensuality of the object and sort of just curves and stuff. She's one of the people who is directly responsible for all of that stuff. And some of it is quite cool. Some of it, we won't discuss which ones are good. Personally, just because I chose it, I like geometry. I like hard edges and stuff like that. But then again, it's still abstract. And one of the things that I got to go do is go count the squares, figure out the angles, and figure out the rectangles and where the square circles are and how they relate. Because that whole sort of circle to square thing and squaring the circle and circling the square, that could be quite cool. And especially if you get into all sorts of numerology and other sort of interesting ways of interpreting art, but to me it just makes, it's a way to make you look closer at it. So if there's seven squares and three circles and three divided by seven or seven divided by three and what's the diameter, and you get the pie into there and everything like that. And personally, I prefer lemon meringue pie and cherry pie to pumpkin pie and sugar pie. You're not paying attention at all. I'm not even seeing you laugh there.
I was, but I just thought you were just trying to ramble on. Yeah.
And that's trying to get a rise out of you.
Just to see if I would react.
Exactly.
Which I did have a question before, but now I totally forgot because I just got distracted by your other details of
But after she became famous and stuff like that in the late 50s, she sort of, her career sort of went into a decline and she wasn't as well known anymore. And then especially after she died, when she wasn't making anything anymore. But back in 96, there was an exhibition of her work in New York City. And so she slowly rising above and making people more aware. And at one auction, the auction house tried to market her as the first great female sculptor in the history of Western art. Some of the other things that I was quite taken with is there was an article in the New York Times where this is why I think there are three of them, because I know there's one in Dallas at their public library. There's one here at McGill. And then there was one that got shown in New York. And I don't think they ripped up the one from here or from Dallas to do that. But Grace Glueck, I think, is the woman who wrote the art review. She said, "It's a big green patinated bronze of 1963 that groups squares and rectangles, some incised with circles, in a top-heavy vertical structure that memorializes the placement of these geometrics in Ben Nicholson's painted white relief of 1934. She then goes on to call it static, stagey, and rather self-conscious. They just stand around, which is in direct contradiction to the Dallas Public Library's website, which has an unattributed quote, which it says, "Neither static nor monotonous. This piece has extraordinary rhythm and life, and it's one of Hepworth's most successful attempts to blend the forces of nature and art." Between those, I think it's the sort of thing where I'm not entirely certain what either one is saying, but it is, to me, the thing that makes it fascinating and so on is just that it's there. I don't like the fact that it's squished up against the building, because it really does. The building is much, much larger and much, much more like imposing, and so it sort of makes the sculpture look smaller. It's Barbara Hepworth seems to have known what she was doing when she said it, you should give sculpture space and so on, so as to make them seem larger than life.
It kind of seems unfair that if they're just put in front of a building, right?
Yeah, but it's
kind of takes away from the whole beauty and the whole intricate nature of sculpting.
Yeah, although it is the sort of thing where if you're McGill and you have a choice of either, okay, so we're going to put a building here. Who else can actually handle the sculpture like that? And the appropriate place, obviously, would be on the mountain. But you stick it on the mountain and it's likely to... you have something happen to it, which is not exactly the best idea. And so you want to be a little bit conservative about it. The other thing that I found out is that it got purchased by J.W. McConnell for, quote unquote, the Montreal Star Collection, which is a blast from the past, because I haven't thought about the Montreal Star in, I don't know, probably about 15, 20 years or something like that. And I'm going to try and track down other items from the Montreal Star Collection. And then obviously in some sort of, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, trying to get some sort of tax relief and so on, because J.W. McConnell was an extremely wealthy individual. He then donated it to McGill and probably got a tax receipt for it, and so that he was able to continue making more and more money. I'd like to try and figure out more history about how and what and why it ended up where it is and how long it's going to be there, but I haven't been able to track that down yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But we'll learn about it, I'm sure.
Yes.
Your next segment.
Next segment, I'm going to be working on the Riopelle.
Oh,
the one
right,
which is right next to it, which is Ibu Pell, which apparently is a self-portrait. in sculpture, although it looks more like an owl.
I was thinking about your architecture segments. I'm curious about those.
Yeah, because that's
great segments coming up for Zeke.
I'm hoping. My fingers are crossed. I don't like the anticipation side. I'm not Ketchup, nor am I Carly Simon.
Anyway, thank you so much, Zeke.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's right now 8 o'clock on the dot. Well done. Going to go to Democracy Now! Headlines. Do stay tuned. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, the Monday Morning After Show.